Welcome to the Lubar Executive Education Podcast. In this episode, we'll be talking about whether or not being a manager is a calling or a job. With me today is Derek Van Mill. Over the past 25 years, Derek has worked as a management consultant to help hundreds of leaders in a wide range of organizations and industries improve their businesses. He's authored dozens of articles and delivered keynote presentations throughout the United States, Europe, and Asia, and is the founder of the Center for Management Terms and Practices based in Madison, Wisconsin. Derek is also the author of the recently published book, Atoms and Orchestras, The Case for Standards-Based Management. Welcome, Derek.
Mike, thanks for having me back. It's a pleasure.
It's great to have you back on the show. To get us started off this time, can you talk a little bit about why did you call your book Atoms and Orchestras? And also maybe a little bit about what is standards-based management?
Well, as you said, you know, I've been a consultant for a long time and worked with lots of people in lots of different sectors. And through that experience, I saw the same thing happening over and over again. You know, people having misunderstandings about fundamental terms of management. Try to imagine six marketing people getting together. You know, how many of them would agree what marketing is, right? And that's my throwaway laugh line. Everybody gets that point. And you wonder why management meetings just seem to go in circles all the time. Well, I realized there's just something fundamentally missing in management. And I realized, you know, there's standards and standard language in like every other field of, certainly in business, but all human knowledge, right? I mean, there are standards for plumbers and coders and, you know, architects and builders, but not in management. And I realized, well, there's money in jargon, right, Mike? I know you and I fight that battle all the time.
Yes.
And, but the cost is so high, a fundamental breakdown in communications, because there wasn't a common set of terms, a common set of practices, a common body of knowledge. So to be a good boss, you have to be both competent and compassionate. You need to not only the technical standards, but you also need a common standard of behavior. So Atoms and Orchestras, standards-based management, is about establishing those standards, finally, for the technical aspects of management, for the ethical standards of management, and also for training and education. And you and I, you know, spent a lot of time talking about that and answering the fundamental question, you know, what is a manager? But you'd ask me, you know, why Atoms and Orchestras? And I realized that I needed to make a bold case for adopting standards. And so the two most valuable, most interesting standards in human history, first is the periodic table of elements, which was developed on the afternoon of February 17th, 1869, by Russian physicist Dmitri Mendeleev, orchestrating, if you will, all of the elements of the universe. So that's a pretty big idea and has become sort of the standard language for, you know, not just chemistry and physics and engineering, but really everything that we make, which is kind of a big deal. And then orchestras is a standard of musical notation, which was actually developed in the year 1000 by a Venetian monk, believe it or not, who was trying to harmonize, no pun intended, church music. And it's really that notation we still use today. And it lets everybody, this will sound familiar to your audience, sing off the same sheet of music, speak the same language, work together, collaborate. So I thought I would make the bold claim that having a standard in management would let us finally get everybody speaking the same language and working on the same page. So standards-based management is really the application of that ethical, technical, and developmental training standard, and applies to four proven one-page tools for the generalist manager's basic duties. And again, this will be really familiar to everybody who's listening. Their duties: meeting management, strategic planning, overseeing the process, and project oversight. That's what generalists do. And they need one-page tools, because nobody reads page two anymore, and how to apply the standards of competence and compassion into management. So Atoms and Orchestras was born. And I'm happy to say it's a message that's resonated, I think, particularly with people beginning their management career who are really looking for something that they can build on and take with them, you know, from job to job.
I agree. Having a common language can really cut down on miscommunication, which happens so often in everything we do, not just business. And it can also help people accomplish more quicker when they are trying to move something forward, whether it be a project or something personal. And I do also like the Atoms and the Orchestras explanation that you've given, where you're taking two globally accepted
languages and mixing those together. So it makes total sense to pick things on that scale that the whole world agrees on.
As I was reading through your book, part four really jumped out at me. And that's the part where it's talking about management as a calling. What does that mean to you? And how does somebody know if they really should be a manager?
Yeah, well, it's a great question, because a lot of people become managers because they think they should, or because they've been asked, not because they really know what it is or that they really want to.
Yes.
So part of the developmental standards, and you were a great help putting this together, was defining what is a manager. And the definition, the standard definition now, is a manager is someone who helps people work together. Sounds simple, doesn't it, Mike? And that's a deep human need. We love to work with groups and accomplish something that really has meaning. So a manager is someone who helps people work together to achieve something great. And the characteristics of a manager, someone with both competence and compassion, is, in a word, maturity. I mean, that means that they're comfortable in emotional situations. They have high emotional intelligence. People use that frame. And they're caring people. But what makes it a calling, though? And you and I both know lots of people who have made management a calling. A member of, I think, has been on your show, someone you know teaches at Lubar, Bob DeVita, is a good example of that. But what makes it a calling, like being a nurse or a coach? A story I love to tell is about my own aunt, Norma Sweeney, who's now 90. And she was a teacher in the Catholic school system in Chicago. And she would tell me, years ago, how happy she was when, after she'd retired, she'd be at the grocery store in her neighborhood where she taught, and someone would come up to her and say, Mrs. Sweeney, I want you to meet one of my kids. I told them all about you. When I had you as my fourth grade teacher, you made such a difference in my life. You woke me up to the importance of learning. And she heard that really pretty often, which is just an amazing thing. Well, she just had her 90th birthday, and she was telling me, now what happens, she's out at the grocery store. People come up to her and say, Mrs. Sweeney, I want you to meet one of my grandchildren. I've been telling them about how great you were, and how much you helped me and my daughter, my son, as a teacher. Now that's a calling. And that what a great validation of proof that you've done the right thing, helping other people make the world a better place. That's really what a calling is. And my aunt represents that: humble, caring, competent, careful, just a wonderful, wonderful person. So basically, having a calling means you've dedicated yourself to helping other people reach their full potential. And of course, that's what schools do. That's what Lubar does. It's really the faith that if you help other people reach their potential, not only is their organization, their immediate circle going to get better, but the world's going to get better. And so, as I said, a good manager, a manager with a calling, is someone who helps people fulfill that deep need to help people work together to achieve great things. And my observation is that process of management as a calling goes through basically four stages through someone's career. Often people start to be a manager because they're complaining about the system. They might say, the culture here sucks, or we don't know what we're doing, or they, meaning the senior people, never seem to do the right thing. So often people become a manager because they want to help fix the system. They want to help others not suffer, as they see it, from a system that doesn't work. That's stage one. Stage two is then they humanize their work. They really start to see, I'm really doing this because I'm helping other people. I had a great moment in a planning session with a medical foundation, people had worked together for decades. And one of the managers leaned into the table and said, now I see how what I do helps you guys. And that was, for me, the defining moment in my own arc, which was just a great, great moment. And then the next phase is people beginning to get confidence in themselves as managers. And so they increase their span of control. They want to get promoted. They want to do more, not so that they can have a bigger office, but that they can help more people. And it doesn't seem like that in the world today, but there are lots of people who are like that. God bless them. And then after that, sort of the next stage, maybe the final stage, is then they begin to see that they can help managers as mentors, as teachers. Maybe they serve on the board of directors. There's some of your teachers and lecturers, and help spread the word. So now it's important to realize that being a good manager, is of course good for an organization in practical ways. And we did a series, the top five KPIs. And we had people in on your podcast, and we talked about measurable benefits of competent managers: sales performance, sales growth, customer satisfaction, quality improvement, productivity improvement. And the most important, really, from a manager, retention. And Emily Pellman from Leading Edge talked about that. And there's recently a study in Canada of the effectiveness of good managers. And interesting sort of conclusion was they noticed that good managers retain good people, and bad managers don't retain good people. They retain not so good people. So, and we all know that that's fundamentally what makes a difference in an organization. So, you know, it's good for the organization. It's certainly good for a manager. You know, in being, having good generalist chops as a manager means you can work in lots of places. You know, specialists might get paid more, but the more specialized you are, the more vulnerable you are to changes in your field, right? And we've got a member who, a good, great generalist manager who has worked in government, has worked in manufacturing, has worked in certain services because she has fantastic generalist management ability. She will never be out of a job. And then, you know, I think implied in your question is, you know, why you should not be a manager. Again, please don't be a manager because you want a bigger office, you want more pay or the status. Please think carefully about, you know, what it means to be a manager, pressures and challenges of it, and whether or not you're suited to it. And not everybody is. When someone becomes a manager and they really shouldn't be, bad things happen, not only to the people around them, but for them. And we have seen lots of people who have taken on that role and then really wish they hadn't. So, so management as a calling is really important for us to think about, because it's really how we can make the world a better place. I really believe it.
Yeah, I really like how you're, you know, summing it up with making the world a better place. I believe that. And that's a lot of what I'll talk about with groups when I'm working with them and working with the individual leaders as well. Just want to go back for a second and say, I think your aunt sounds like an amazing person, and happy late 90th birthday to her.
Thank you. I'll tell her.
You know, I really also push it, and I talk a lot about in our programs about creating an emotional connection to work, not only for the leaders that are in the room in front of me or with me, but making sure that their teams and they understand, you know, what is their emotional connection to the work that is being done, because then, yeah, you can get more of that fulfillment feeling for what you do on a day-to-day basis. And of course, you know, there's the paycheck, which is why most of us go to work, but having that emotional connection really helps you retain people and make sure that we're making the world a better place, as you say.
Right, Mike. And I would add that, you know, a good manager is dedicated to making people happy at work. And that's just not some solipsism, but rather it means they feel safe, but also that they feel included, that they belong, that they're appreciated. And you simply can't make people feel like they belong until you understand them as people and care about, fundamentally care about them as people. So, I think about Linus from the Peanuts cartoon, who once said, I love mankind as people I can't stand. Maybe not manager material.
Probably not. That's a good example.
Yeah.
So taking this another step further, does the idea of management as a calling have effects outside of the workplace?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, sometimes a business, any organization, has a clear economic effect in its community. That's easy to see. Some businesses, you know, donate to the community. They sponsor the little league football team. They volunteer. You know, they do all kinds of things, and that has a big multiplier effect. And of course, they spend money in the community. A client of mine, a flooring distributor, built a new building, and they did that because they had a great team. Everybody's working well together. And one day, Jeff, the CEO, was just looking out his window at the new parking lot they built. This is about 6 months after they moved into the new building. He realized a lot of his employees had bought new cars. You know, that's an indicator clearly that they had faith in the business, but also the economic benefit to the community. So that's, you know, clearly there's an economic multiplier effect. And that's certainly true. But there's a story I love to tell that about the sort of the human effect, if you will. This is a exercise equipment manufacturer that had a plant in Mexico, and they were having some quality issues. And they lost their big customer because of the quality issues. One day they get a call from their second biggest customer. They're really worried about it. And this COO says, I'm concerned about the quality. I understand this is coming from your plant in Mexico. I'm going to go down there and see what's going on. Maybe you should join me. So of course they went down there. This fella tours the plant, puts his arm around the plant manager, says, you and I are going to turn this factory around. And they did in 6-8 weeks. So not only did this business, not only did they save that customer, they also won the other customer back. Now, how easy would it have been for that COO just to scold their vendor, the manufacturer, or blow them off, find somebody else? But no, he saw his role as helping other people outside of his workplace. And think of all that that meant to those jobs and for both in Mexico and in America, you know, enormous benefit. So if you care about people, and that includes people, your suppliers, your customers, but it's also true when you're a happy employee, you come home and you bring that good feeling back into your family at home. Certainly if you have kids at home, a spouse, they want mom or dad to come home in a good mood, full of energy, not barely scraping through the week, and then ultimately quitting and all that disruption. So if we can teach people how to work together and the workplace, collaborate and take care of each other, well, we can do that outside of the workplace too. Starts at home, but then that radiates then to, you know, our other community activities, whether it's at, you know, church or temple, or it's where we volunteer, whatever it is we do. And so, yes, absolutely. If you take up management as a calling, teach people how to work well together, not only will you be teaching them, but your employees will then go home and they'll have a ripple effect economically and humanistically, you know, throughout the world. And given the state of the world today, you know, I think we need a grassroots movement to change how we treat each other and how we talk to each other. I think absolutely, you know, good employer, good boss has big effect, much bigger effect than they're aware of outside of just their day-to-day job.
Couldn't agree more. And a grassroots effort definitely cannot hurt these days for sure. When you think about it, we spend so much of our time at work. We should be enjoying that. And we should hopefully come home, as you said, with energy for our personal lives, our families, the ones we care about most. I talk sometimes about dinner table conversations that could take place if you're a leader with the people who are reporting to you. So they're going to, you know, your team's going to go home. And what do you want that dinner conversation to be like? Do you want it to be a happy conversation, or do you want it to be dark and quiet, or just anger filled or frustration filled? Nobody wants that. So I think sometimes that's a powerful concept to help people understand the impact that they can have as a leader.
So my next question is, what is your dream for management as a calling? Can you describe it as a movement?
Well, I very much would like it to be a movement. And again, I talk to people again at the beginning of their management careers. I don't want them to, you know, give up hope of making the world a better place, you know, by doing good work, and not just good works in the general sense, but making their organizations, you know, stable and prosperous. So I'm having the privilege of speaking April 14th at Viterbo University's annual ethics conference, Blessed Are the Peacemakers. And my theme is what we're talking about. If managers can show other people how to get along at work, well, you're showing them how they can get along outside of work too. And so I think that there's a hunger for learning how to, you know, be a better citizen, really, and setting an example that maybe means that we're not going to be waiting for our political leaders to set an example, but we're going to be the ones setting an example. And Mike, I know you're a modest fellow, but I think it's true that Lubar is really part of that movement already. You were telling me that your own listeners come from, is it 52 countries? Is that right? And 661 cities.
That's correct.
That is just mind blowing that people are hungry to know how to do a good job at work. And it means that they're reaching out for ideas all over the world. So we need to take a hold of that and build on that. But here's my sort of down-to-earth picture of success. So let's say there's a small Wisconsin business. Now they might have suppliers in, oh, let's say Ukraine and China. That's not unrealistic at all, right? And that they've been certified in standard-based management and your strategic leadership series, of course. That organization, that small business, you know, they have a great reputation as a place to work. So they've attracted great managers and great people. That means, you know, like the equipment manufacturer, they have great relationships with their vendors who treat them as partners. And those vendors could be from any place in the world. And of course, those vendors have vendors themselves. We're just so incredibly connected. And it used to be that was only the province of Walmart, you know, with 100,000 vendors. It's true that even a small business in Wisconsin has connections all over the planet. So that my hope is that then their vendors take up management as a calling. They pick up standards-based management. They learn these simple standards and tools, which are free online. And it helps them get across all kinds of challenging, both cultural borders and political borders. During the Second World War, one of the incredible stories of the war was that scientific collaboration continued between American and German and Japanese scientists throughout the war. It was like the war wasn't even going on, but they were doing their best to collaborate, maybe using some of the common standards that they had, you know, to help advance, you know, the cause of truth and discovery and help the world recover. So there's a story there. And maybe like the quality movement, that was not just about improving margins, but helping people be proud of what they built, both nationally and in the organizations. And so ultimately, what I like to do is get all those vendors together who have taken up this calling, and we'll have our first international conference hosted at Lubar, and we'll have everybody talk together about using the same language, talking about the same issues, you know, helping them get better and better, you know, both technically and ethically, so they can help make the world a better place. So that's my big vision, Mike. So I'm signing you up for that.
I love it. And, we would be happy to host that first international conference for sure here at Lubar. And I like to think we're a part of that movement and appreciate you calling out of some of the good work that we've done here. And we do a lot more wonderful things that are all related to this. So I like to think we're going to be continuing with that effort that you've started here for quite a long time.
I know you will.
Well, Derek, thank you so much for making time in your schedule today to come in on the show and talk to us a little bit about management as a calling. And if anybody is interested in learning more from you, where should we point them to?
Well, our website, theindex.net, not .com. And you'll see right there, there's all kinds of information right on the homepage. The tools are there. The standards are there. All of it's free. You'll see a menu heading the book. So you can go there either to order it from Amazon, or you can get free PDFs of the main sections, you know, some of the things that we've talked about today. So please pay us a visit and give those things a try. And people, of course, can reach out to me, and I'm happy to help them along in their journey. Thanks for asking.
Perfect. I'll add some information about the index and the book into the show notes. Definitely recommend everybody to go out there and take a look and become part of the movement. In closing, I'd like to take a moment and thank our listeners. We wish you the best of luck as you move forward on your leadership journey. Please check back regularly for additional episodes.